from WUOT News. This is The Method, a series exploring the intersection of science and society. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Later in the program, couples sometimes fight about money or work, but for some couples, sleep may also be on that list. We'll talk about sleep dynamics in a relationship. But first, Tennessee's voters head to the polls on primary day next Tuesday, March 1st. Gone are the paper ballots of decades past. The process is virtually all electronic now. So what happens once you press the button that records your ballot? Where does the information go? To find out, Nat Schaefer Powell spoke with Chris Davis of the Knox County Election Commission.
When I go to vote, I go up to an electronic voting machine, I spin a few dials, I hit a few buttons, and ta-da, I've cast my vote. But I'm guessing that's just the beginning.
Well, certainly for us, it's the end and the beginning. The beginning, obviously, number one, is entering the polling place and exercising your right to vote, if you will. When your ballot is cast, it is secure in three places. Number one, it's secure on the actual machine that you voted on, the e-slate in the hard drive. Number two, it's located on a mobile ballot box, which is a little credit card-sized device that slides into and is locked into the e-slate for voting purposes. And then it's also wired back to the JBC, which actually gave you your ballot in the first place. And from there, what we will do is, at the end of the night, when the polls close, a Republican and a Democrat will escort all of these machines that you voted on and your neighbors and friends voted on down to the Election Commission.
Physically picking up the machines in a vehicle
that
and
is correct.
Driving them.
And it's very important to note that when you vote, that machine you vote on, it is not connected to the internet.
I think a lot of people might be surprised to learn that in the year 2016, we're actually still physically driving these boxes to the Election Commission.
One of the things, number one, we do this because of state law. And certainly, number two, I think we just do it because of the security factor that it adds in. You know, we're making sure that the votes are secured and they're not being passed over the internet before they're tabulated, if you will. They are tabulated in the Knox County Election Commission under the watchful eye, like I say, of Republican election commissioners, Democratic election commissioners, staff, Knox County IT. And so it just adds a layer and level of security and, I think, more than anything, comfort and assurance that the political process and certainly the electoral process is being handled in as impartial a manner as possible.
My polling station where I vote represents to me on election day kind of an interesting mix of technologies, both old and new. I'm voting on an e-slate, but there are also reams or stacks of paper and there are pens there. Are we ever going to get to a point where the pens and the paper are gone and it's entirely an electronic process?
Well, some places already are nationwide. The technology certainly exists. Is that something we'll see in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? Quite possibly. We haven't done it yet, but it's something we've looked at. I think in Knox County's case, we really don't want to be the test case and be the first people.
That seems like that would be quite a gamble for any election commission.
It would be.
It
absolutely would be.
Yeah, because if they get something wrong.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the job of the election commission, our sworn job as election officials, is to protect the integrity of the ballot and the voting process. And so until we can safely 100% do that with technology alone, and until our partners can assure us that they feel comfortable with that, you know, we won't make that move.
Chris Davis is the Assistant Administrator for the Knox County Election Commission. Thank you for coming in today.
It's my pleasure. Glad to be here.
Last month, the New York Times pointed out something that many of us already know from experience. In a relationship, getting quality sleep can be a real challenge. Dr. Teresa Lee is a sleep psychologist and a past guest here on The Method, and she says that while sleep research is in vogue these days, very little has been done to study how couples affect each other's sleep.
Most of the research that's been done on sleep thus far has been done to understand what controls sleep and what its normal architecture looks like. To understand all of that, you have to have all these electrodes on, you have things by your eyes, you'll sometimes have a pulsometer, you might have something around your rib cage to tell how you're breathing, and to do that for two people simultaneously would be a tall order. So I actually went looking for you, because I haven't done this kind of research myself, to see what has been published. Indeed, there isn't a lot. I could not find a single study where both individuals in a dyadic sleep pair, which is what they call it, were wired up, so to speak. So then when I went and looked at the literature on, you know, is sleeping how we sleep together as a couple affecting each other's sleep? The answer is clearly yes.
Well, I do want to talk about the fallout. What can happen, couples' sleep can affect the quality of what happens the next day.
Yes, that's wonderful.
And in particular, like snoring can be really disruptive to your partner's sleep, which can affect their concentration.
Yep.
It can affect their fatigue during the day.
Yep.
Let's talk about what does happen when you have that disrupted
when you
sleep.
Have that partner.
Yeah.
So I thought that there was the most interesting study I found, and it is a well-done study. And it turns out there was a gender difference in the impact. If a man goes to bed and is anxious, he's more likely to have disrupted sleep. And if something happens in the night to disrupt his sleep, the next day he's going to be grumpy. And his interactions with his partner are likely to be more testy than they would otherwise. Women, because of the testy interactions, then have insomnia and don't sleep well. So you end up with this cycle of my partner isn't sleeping well, that makes me awake, then I'm grumpy the next day, and that impacts my partner, so on and so forth. And so I thought that was really interesting, that how men and women sleep are affected by each other can lead to a degrading of the sleep pattern.
The old trope about couples is that typically they fight about money. That's a common source of friction or disagreement. I would wonder, is sleep on that list too, especially if you and your partner have like radically different sleep patterns?
I think that you're right that that can be an issue, but it need not be an issue, right? I think it really depends on the couple. What happens if one person in the couple is a very light sleeper and just sleeping with anybody makes them not able to get good sleep?
Mm-hmm.
And so that person wants to sleep alone at night, not because there's anything wrong with our relationship, but because
they just tend to sleep better alone.
I need to sleep. And
yeah.
If I don't get enough sleep, my life is going to be distressed. So there are couples that, we go back to the 1950s TV show with
separate beds. Yeah.
Right? But there are couples who live like that and are happy like that. Our movie world, our TV world tells us that couples should live a certain kind of way. And that isn't necessarily the only way to live. For some couples, it isn't going to work well.
Dr. Teresa Lee is the Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Tennessee. She is also a sleep psychologist, and we've been talking about couples' sleep dynamics. Dr. Lee, as always, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to The Method. You can find our entire program archive online at WUOT.org. You can also download it for your listening convenience through iTunes. We'll see you next time. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth.